Appendix 1. Christendom. Contrary to what a great many people think, contrary to what a growing number of people think, the time of the fathers, men who lived mainly in the 2nd to 5th centuries AD, by and large, proved a time of disaster for the Church of Jesus Christ. While not all that they did was bad, nevertheless the fathers took a series of steps which inflicted massive and lasting damage on the Church. But one of their innovations stands head and shoulders above all the rest in terms of the devastating effect it has had on the gospel and the ecclesia of Jesus Christ. Another way of looking at this is to think of it as an envelope holding all the other innovations. So serious was this step that some discerning believers down the centuries have given it a name, the fall of the Church. I am talking about the invention of Christendom. I fix no precise date to this. This is not possible. It didn't happen overnight. It was a process. But in broad outline, within a few years of the so-called conversion of the Roman Emperor Constantine, he and the fathers invented, or did a great deal towards inventing, the monstrosity. What is Christendom? It is that grotesque, satanic construction, that conglomeration of church and state, in which citizenship and church membership are one and the same, in which millions of unregenerate babies are, so say, made Christians by priests or ministers who exercise sacramental powers through baptism, that is, the sprinkling of infants, these babies then being called Christians and church members and treated as such at birth, throughout life, and at death. Even where infant baptism has been rejected, Christendom still rules for the overwhelming majority. Christendom has proved Satan's masterstroke. By it, the archenemy of souls has deluded millions of men and women for 1800 years, even to their eternal ruin. He is making use of it to this very hour. According to the New Covenant, the Church is confined to believers. The Church exists for believers. For believers, I repeat. Of course, believers want to see sinners saved, but the notion that this means churchifying the unchurched is utterly foreign to the New Testament. The first believers simply would not recognize the concept. The notion only came into existence with Constantine and Theodosius and the invention of Christendom. In the New Testament, evangelism, defining that as gospeling the ungodly, unbelievers, pagans, the lost, the unconverted, is something done outside the Church. Church is for saints, and for saints only. Christendom has well nigh ruined gospeling the lost, making it practically impossible. Yes, God still saves sinners despite the curse of Christendom. But this is a measure not of the insignificance of Christendom, let alone, God forbid, its rightness and virtue, but of His grace. Nevertheless, this does not justify the evil. Let me list some of the consequences of Christendom. Veneration for buildings, priestcraft, pastorcraft, clergy and laity, sacerdotalism, sacramentalism, vestments, ordination, apostolic succession, the mixture of the regenerate and the unregenerate in so-called visible churches, the idea of attending church, public worship, in short, churchianity, institutionalized religion in the name of Christ. As for attending church and public worship, I am talking about the institutionalization of the assembly of believers. Church has become a building, even where the building is a hired hall, a school, or some such. Consequently, church attendance and public worship are thought of as religious activity intimately connected with that building. In truth, it is a return to the old covenant with its stress on place and observation. Worship should be a 24/7 attitude for the believer. Christendom has done much to reduce this to the observance of a ritual in a building. For many, it could be summed up as attendance at a meeting under one man who exercises one gift in one place on one day. It is a question of attendance rather than spiritual life and participation, the latter being reduced more or less to corporate hymn singing or a repeated liturgy, liturgical worship gaining ground where once it would not have been countenanced. Let me say a little more about sacramentalism and sacerdotalism. Sacramentalism is the idea that certain men can convey grace to others by their actions. Sacerdotalists delegate their worship into the hands of others, who they feel are better able, more qualified, to carry it out for them. In such a system, worship is a specialized task, best left to a special class, priests. Hence has arisen the unbiblical notion of the clergy and the laity. But in the New Covenant, there is no justification for sacerdotalism, nor any notion of clergy and laity. The priesthood of all believers, as set out by the New Testament, certainly gives no warrant for sacerdotalism or its twin sister, sacramentalism. Do not run away with the idea that sacramentalism and sacerdotalism are confined to Romanists. Far from it. The magisterial reformers went badly astray at this point. Grievously clinging, and clinging tenaciously, to the sacramental doctrine and practice they inherited from the fathers and the medieval church, time and again they had their backs to the wall, trying to fend off Roman taunts and challenges over the issue. Unsurprisingly, they were not always successful. Unsurprisingly, since both sides were so strongly wedded to the fathers and the medieval. And all this applies to more than the Reformed. Many evangelicals, dissenters, nonconformists, Baptists, like their bit of sacerdotalism.